Green, where do deliberations stand on this potential White House plan to allow a certain number of Palestinian refugees into the U.S.?
So I don't have any updates for you. I know I've been asked this question multiple times about conversations happening here. Don't have anything to share. What I will say is, and I've said this many times before, in the beginning of what happened occurred on October 7th, we put in a plan. There were about 1,800 Palestinian Americans that were in Gaza, and we did everything that we can to get them out if they choose to, if that's something that they wanted to do, and certainly were able to do that. As it relates to a refugee program or anything in that nature, I don't have any announcement to make, and I'll just leave it there because I want to be really mindful about that, about getting ahead of that.
So that is... that is Karine Jean-Pierre there, who's discussing the ongoing lack of messaging or really anything. Because this, we told you about this last week, this issue of the messed up response that the administration had with regard to Gaza, and how it was weird because it was like they were negotiating, and they were negotiating on behalf of Israel and with Hamas, and yet, you know, they weren't actually talking, which is kind of important. They weren't actually talking with Israel and all of it. So that's a big problem. Welcome to the program, Dana Lash, with you here today, and we're gonna go through everything. Just a little warning: I'm a little off today because I'm positive an ear infection. So it's going to be a little weird. We're a little loopy today. If I fall out of my chair, it's because I have vertigo. So, yeah, it's all right. You know, the show goes on and all that. We got stuff to do. So, just FYI. I will say, for those of you who are tuning in, I'm in color today. I don't know how I feel about it.
Very different.
It's a purple shirt. This is more important than anything, any news we could discuss right now. It's more important than any of that. I feel weird.
You look great, though.
Well, I'm not fishing for compliments, but thank you.
I get it. I'm just
it's purple honest. And it's loud. Like, it's like purple. I'm in a purple shirt. It's a new item of clothing. I actually bought it in a store and not in bulk because I buy all my black shirts in bulk on Amazon. I'm not even joking. You guys think I'm so fancy.
The fact you call that loud.
Dude, this is the loudest purple shirt I've ever.
Everything.
I feel like a gay disco.
What your preferred clothing is.
Because it's so purple. Look how purple it is. It's so purple. Anyway, I'm not fishing for compliments, but, you know, I feel like I'm covered in sparkles. It's a little awkward for me. I don't know what to do with my arms now. I got an ear infection. I'm doing the show in a purple shirt. The hell's going on? All right. So just, you know, it's a weird day. Anyway, back to our point, though, because we've had this issue. And we had yesterday, we talked, I told you the story about how they had to revise all of their casualty totals because they had lied about everything, which you knew they had. You know, it was just, this is just like a formality at this point. You knew that they had. And so this just makes it even more awkward, I think, for the administration to not be forthright the way that they need to be. To not be forthright with people and in terms of how they're negotiating. Why wasn't Israel involved with this? And also, how many refugees are we taking in? Oh, we don't have a number for you on that. We don't know. We're going to be taking some refugees, but we don't know. That aggravates to not have any kind of clarity on that, because that's what it was. Like, how many refugees? And not everyone's a refugee. Not everyone's an asylee. That they're... different words invoke different legal processes, and that's why the correct terminology is important. And, you know, we were told, too, that going through Rafah, that the IDF was going to be just blowing up women and children right and left. Well, then guess what? You have all these international reporters that are there now, and they say, well, these refugee camps are actually pretty much cleared of Gazans and any kind of non-combatant. So... and that, too, again, fabricated, because everyone's taking stuff from the Hamas ministry of this and the Hamas ministry of that. Well, guess, or the, sorry, Gazan ministry. It's the same thing. You get it. So that's a major issue. So the they need to just, the United States honestly has helped drag this out to a ridiculous extreme. Now, speaking of ridiculous extremes, I'm not talking about the trial stuff because I'm not doing 24/7 coverage of it. But they had Speaker Johnson up there today, Byron Donalds, Doug Burgum. Can we talk about Doug Burgum for a minute here coming up? Because he's not also, he's not a VP pick either. Can we stop flirting with the idea of these moderates? Doug Burgum is not a VP. He was going to run as a Democrat. He couldn't run as a Democrat in his state, so he ran as a Republican. He's a very, very moderate guy. Let's stop lionizing these people whose records aren't fully widely known across the country. But they also had Speaker Mike Johnson up there. Mike Johnson was up there as a thank you because Trump intervened, I think, behind the scenes to the extent, I don't know, maybe it's blown up to make him look like he's everywhere at once or whatever. I don't know. But regardless, Trump didn't go out at him publicly. And so this is Mike Johnson saying that, you know, he was thanking Trump, so to speak, for this, for doing that. That's why he was up there. He was up there talking about this. Can I just, I said this last week and I cannot reiterate this enough. I think that the American public at large is convinced that what's happening up there is a ridiculous freak show. It's goofy. I think everybody pretty much agrees that it's a witch hunt at this point. I think most people understand the nature of the charges and how Bragg, Alvin Bragg, has bastardized it. Just a quick recap, if you didn't know, I'll keep it under 30 seconds. In New York, if you commit a misdemeanor, it's a misdemeanor, but if you commit another crime to hide the previous crime, then that can be elevated to a felony in layman's terms. And that's ultimately what was happening here. And they wanted to get that felony charge in order to go after Trump. And that's what this was. So they got Michael Cohen on the stand right now. And he's supposed to be their star witness. This guy literally is the human embodiment of a cheap polyester suit. He's just, and his testimony, he apparently kind of compromised himself because Cohen was trying to make it out like Trump was the one who authorized the incremental repayments, and it actually wasn't him, it was another guy. So he's like stepping all over his own testimony. It's not going well for him. But I wish that when these lawmakers came out and they talked about the trial, say something about the trial, fine. But then you know what? You have all of the press assembled in front of you. You could use it as a free ad. You could use it as a stage and hammer Democrats on every single issue. And these goofballs that have all their cameras set up there all around the courthouse, they have to cover it. They're going to have to take it, at least some of it. So you could have all in the surrogates, too. Anyone who is up there, say one thing about the trial and then get over it and then start hammering Democrats. Because if Democrats are going to make it to where he can't campaign, then by God, you need to use that courthouse, those steps, every time he comes out for a break. I don't care what it is. He's going to go out and get a stick of spearmint. I don't care. Use it as earned media. Use it as a campaign ad stage. Immediately hammer Democrats and get that message, drive that message out there. Give a surrogate. Each surrogate has a different topic. You're talking about the economy. You're talking about foreign policy. You're talking about trade. You're talking about manufacturing. You're talking about jobs. You're talking about tax cuts. Give every single one of those surrogates a topic to hit. And every single time they get in front of that mic, they need to hit that topic. Because all of this, everybody got out there behind the mic and said the same damn thing. For 5 minutes, each of them got up there for like 5 minutes, and they said, each of them said the same damn thing. They echoed each other. And no offense to Vivek Ramaswamy. And by the way, he was going to be on the show a couple of weeks ago when he was in town, but we could not get it worked out because it happened to coincide when I was on call for federal jury duty. So that threw everything out the window. I think that his remarks, because he got very energetic in his remarks from the courthouse today. Oh my gosh, can you imagine if he just said only like one thing about the trial and then went off about the economy? Can you imagine? Talked about and made these people cover it. Can you? I mean, think about the power of this. Golly, please, for the love of all things holy, strategize on this. Oh my gosh, I cannot say it enough. And I know that I'm not the only one thinking this because we all share. I mean, come on, they're all saying the same thing about it. We get it. We get it. We get it. Now, talk to what is in Americans' in our concerns. Talk to what we're dealing with at home. Talk to what we're dealing with taxes. Talk to what we're dealing with inflation. Hit all of those points. Concerns about jobs, the housing market. And then all of these media outlets have to cover it. So again, I say, if they're not going to allow him to campaign because they're going to keep him tied up in this, then by God, use that as your earned media. There's your campaign stage. have a campaign and then hit all the issues every single day. They would get so mad at him. I honestly, I'm not even joking, and I'm actually not really exaggerating. I honestly think that they would wrap it up sooner because they would get so tired of him using it for campaign ads. You know that, you know it. They would get so tired of it. They'd be like, oh my gosh, whatever we got to do to get him out of this courthouse. And then do that for every damn trial. Make it, you got to weaponize these things. Like, for instance, how I used to, there was a campaign to actually stop sending me hate mail a couple of years back. I don't know if you guys were aware of this. It was on a progressive website because they got so mad that I monetized it. When I started getting hate mail early in my radio career, I had people sponsor it and I would read it on air for cash money. And every now and then I still do it. But there was a concerted effort, an organized effort to stop sending me hate mail. Because they were, the left was angry because I was making money off of it. And they got really mad about it. You gotta weaponize every single one of these things. Turn it into something that generates hard currency for you, whether it's earned media, whether it's actual campaign donate, whatever it is, votes, turn it into something like that. Because I guarantee you, Democrats will stop doing it the moment you figure out how to make it work for you. Like I joke all the time. I'm not actually joking. I'm being serious. Republicans ought to send a whole contingent down to the damn border when you got a deluge of people coming across illegally. Just start registering people to vote Republican. I guarantee you, Democrats are going to shut that border faster than you can blink your eyes. You got to weaponize this stuff. Republicans have got to start thinking like this. It's not mean. It's not petty. It's strategy. All right. So we got more on the way. We got some cultural issues too. There's two stories I'm going to touch on you about. Going to kind of get in the weeds a smidge with them. We've been talking about the Dexter Taylor case. We've got his attorney coming up in our second hour. But also, remember how the town that I lived in Southlake, our school board fight was the first school board fight in the nation, predating that of even Virginia. We were the first school that went to the ballot box and we took over the school board because they were actually going to, and I'm going to discuss this, implement DEI, CRT, taxpayers were going to pay for it. It was crazy. Well, NBC, I believe, is working with the DOJ to punish the school district and the parents for doing it. There's this grifter, this white progressive, who has been making bank off of pushing racial division in the city, even at the expense of ignoring the families of color that actually led the pushback. And now the DOJ wants to get involved and meddle in our school board and our school district as revenge. And I'm going to explain that to you because you got to watch for this in your district. If they do it here, they're coming for yours. The time is now to revolutionize how you approach health and wellness. So I want to introduce you to Lumen. It's a groundbreaking handheld metabolic coach. And with Lumen, you can track your metabolism through your breath and get real-time insights on whether you're burning fat or carbs. And the best part is that the Lumen app provides tailored guidance to enhance your nutrition, your workouts, your sleep cycles, even stress management. So it works pretty easy. You just breathe into your Lumen device first thing in the morning and you get this snapshot of your metabolism for the day along with a personalized nutrition plan. And plus you can use it before and after workouts and meals, ensuring that you're always in tune with what's happening in your body. It helps you read your body's signals and it gives you an accurate metabolic reading, whereas you usually would have to go to a lab for that. Your metabolism is your body's engine and it powers everything that you do. So optimizing it with Lumen means easier weight management, improved energy levels, better fitness results, better sleep. So if you're ready to take the next step in your health journey, head over to lumen.me and use code DanaShow for $100 off your Lumen device. Remember, that's lumen.me, lumen.me. And don't forget to use code DanaShow for $100 off. Thanks to Lumen for sponsoring this episode and helping everybody achieve their health goals.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Seth Meyers renews his NBC contract through... He's still on TV. He's so not funny. He's not funny unless he's being the second banana to an actual funny person. He's just... He doesn't... What? It almost makes me not like him because he tries to be funny. There's an empathy factor that he lacks. I don't know how to describe it. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's just not funny. Anyway, he's renewed his contract. He's going to do stuff for NBC. I have no idea why. All the way through 2020. Okay. Let's see. Pumping iron makes you have a fitter brain. Today in Obvious, guess what? If you don't sit on your backside and turn into a giant fat Jabba the Hutt, it's better for your brain. Did you guys know that? What? Like, if you exercise, it's healthier. What? They did a whole study on this.
No one told me about
this. No one said this ever. If only we had known. Gosh dang. We so many missed opportunities. They said that resistance training boosts your brain health, which is why I'm super smart, by the way. Weightlifting improves brain function. Wait, so you're telling me more muscle? See, they tell you education is important, but big biceps are importanter. This is what we're telling you guys.
That's what I'm getting.
That's right. They said weightlifting is so beneficial, no drug achieves the same combination of benefits, except the drug of joy that comes from having sweet gains. This, the LA mayor's dog helped stop a man who shouted Karen during a break-in. Now, when I first saw this, I was like, the dog shouted Karen? What? A man who broke into Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass's house shouted her name repeatedly. Or maybe he was looking for somebody who had previously asked for the manager. I don't know. He smashed in a glass door at her mansion. But then he got spooked by her German Shepherd, which are really God's dogs. And prosecutors allege that during the break-in, the guy screamed Karen several times, Ephraim Hunter. And the dog reacted, of course, because he's such a good boy. And anyway, so they said that they're still investigating it. But yeah, he thought he was her son-in-law. That's a whole other issue. Scorpions invaded Las Vegas Valley neighborhoods, residents say. Not the amazing band, the actual insects, which are kind of terrifying and gross. They sting you with their butts. And they said that people are like they're having a problem getting pest control out to people's homes because pest control is in such demand. Stick with us. Our partners that'll bring you free radio, the folks over at Gold Co. Because we're all probably, I mean, depending on how November goes, you literally are going to want everything possible as some kind of hedge against inflation with Gold Co. Because we're all going to be probably owning nothing, eating bugs and sitting in the wilderness somewhere because that's what's going to happen. Everybody's going to be too broke to have a house. Taxes are going to be astronomical. Gold Co. is offering you a free 2024 wealth protection kit. You can learn how to possibly get $10,000 in bonus silver as a listener of this show. Don't be like, I don't like bonus silver, because only communists say that. People who love America, love money, and love gold and silver definitely want to know how to possibly get $10,000 in bonus silver while supplies last. They have one of the most unique approaches to their business. They want to make sure that you're so thoroughly educated on the gold IRA market and the economy of how it all works. They send you this free kit that walks you through everything. So not only do you get the benefit of owning physical gold or silver, but you understand everything about it. And you don't even have to have an economic degree. It's very easy to follow. They make precious metals ownership very understandable, and they understand it's an important part of your overall retirement and saving strategy. Totally transparent, a frillion bunch of 5-star reviews. They've got a perfect rating from the Better Business Bureau. So get started today at danalikesgold.com. The only thing I don't like about that URL is it doesn't say love. danalikesgold.com, and get your free gold kit from Gold Co. Learn how to get $10,000 in bonus silver and get your complimentary wealth protection kit. That's danalikesgold.com.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
That sometimes people will open the door for you and leave it open, sometimes they won't. And then you need to kick that door down.
So the way she laughs over everything is kind of like frightening. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. Bottom of this first hour. She is an affluent lady. She didn't grow up in Compton. She didn't grow up having to, she didn't grow up having to fight for every single thing like a lot of people did. Even though she acts as though she did. That's what a lot of politicians do. They appropriate the struggle. And the struggle is foreign to so many of them. So again, welcome back to the show. Dana Lash with you. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream the radio program. You can watch the simulcast of the radio program as well. So this is what you need to be aware of with regards to fights in your school district. And it doesn't matter. Just let's lay this argument to shame right now. I cannot stand the people who go, well, do you have kids in the public school district? because my kids, I homeschooled them and then they went to a private Christian school for a reason. But guess what? I pay taxes, a buttload of taxes, a buttload of property taxes to that school. Where my money goes, so goes I. That's the rule. So I pay taxes. And also think of how communities are oriented around school districts. A lot of people will want to move to a particular community because of the school district, right? If you got kids, so one of the reasons we moved to the community that we did was if something were to happen where we couldn't afford a Christian school or whatever, we had a fallback plan, and that we at least had, you know, even though it was leaning progressive, still a public school that was had a lot of opportunities to offer, right? And a lot of people make those decisions. You look at the investment of your tax dollars. So the town that I live in Texas is a very interesting town because it's not a town that I would say is generational residents. About 95% of the people who live in my town came from somewhere else. Everybody started coming to Texas. We came to Texas over a decade ago. And one of the reasons that I was looking at this area, my town that I'm in now, and several other towns, because I wanted to be by one certain church. We knew the church that we wanted to go to. I needed to be by the airport because I was always on a plane. And then we made our decisions around that. And we ended up in the town that we're in, and we're very happy here, and we love our neighbors. And there's a very organized, a small but very vocal and very organized progressive group here that tries to raise hell for everybody. And they were trying to do it with our school board. Now, even though it is Texas, and even though we are technically a Fort Worth suburb, not really a Dallas suburb, because we're closer to Fort Worth, we're actually in, I mean, that's if I, when I, my jury duty, I had to go to Fort Worth and not Dallas. But we're in the suburbs, and I've never lived in the suburbs. I always lived in the country or in the city. I've never lived in the suburbs until I moved here, and it was glorious. I mean, there's so many amazing things in the suburbs. I don't know why people give them such a bad rap. And in this town, I loved the way it was laid out. I, you know, read good things about the academic standards in the school district. I liked the people that we met here, etc. But like I said, there's this very well-funded progressive group, and they've been trying to really, they were running the show at the school board for a long time. So just give you a lay of the land of how this kicked off. We first noticed this happening with our school resource officer program, SROs. A lot of schools have these. In fact, I have a headline coming up later about how Long Island, they're hiring all kinds of SROs to protect 70,000 public school kids in Long Island. They're all making the move, and school districts around the country are doing this. We actually passed a bond issue to fund it here in South Lake, the town I live in. And so we were funding these SROs. We wanted to have trained armed officers to protect our kids. And it was working very well. And then it started to get super progressive. There were numerous proposals, and I've written extensively about this. And I'll make sure I include that if you want to go back and read it. I had a piece in Newsweek as well on this. We passed a bond issue for this. And then the progressives, they created a student group, and then the progressive parents had the students basically front it. And they were demanding the salaries that, again, we voted on for SROs to be, they wanted the SRO program eliminated, and they wanted to hire DEI chiefs, diversity officers, for the school and have the SRO salary fund them. In fact, they just wanted one diversity officer, and they wanted all the salaries for the SRO to fund that person. It was crazy. Then they began proposing required DEI CRT courses. Now, the DEI is the diversity, whatever, all that stupid stuff. The CRT is critical race theory. It is a Marxist strategy wherein racial, sexual, religious identity replaces the economic factors that were previously used with Leninist, Marxist, etc. And so they began demanding coursework as a requirement to graduate from the school. So if you were going to graduate from Carroll ISD, they were demanding that you have these CRT courses. And yes, Marxist courses that talked about how you're horrible if you're a white person, and racial, like they were fabricating history, they were going off of that one project. What's her face did? That PBS ended up adopting and then having to walk away from. And they were pushing all of this stuff and demanding brainwashing in these courses as a requirement to graduate. They also came out with proposals. They almost adopted these. School board almost took them, where students could be permanently penalized for, quote unquote, the word was perceived offenses. So if someone felt as though that they were offended in any kind of way, whether it was like a racial or sexual way, that would be a permanent part of that student's record. There was no due process in this whole system for the students. Understandably, a lot of parents were upset, particularly a lot of families of color. And there was a parental group that formed to push back on against this. And one of the leaders of the group was a Cuban family. Now, lost in all of the reporting on this are those facts. So what ended up happening is an out-of-town white progressive slacker struck gold for NBC and began grifting and making fat bank for himself. I'm not going to tickle his jimmies by mentioning his name or his stupid book that's out today, because he wants attention so bad. He is thirstier than a broke chick on OnlyFans to try to get some attention for this. So he started doing a podcast, doing all this stuff. He was working in coordination with the well-funded progressive group, well-funded and well-organized, that started attacking the parents and all of this stuff. So when these parents formed the group and began pushing back, the progressives attacked them. I don't know if you remember this, but I wrote about this at the time. This was actually pretty insane. They actually sent out mailers railing against the families. They made false accusations. What they did was actually libelous, like legitimately libelous. They were naming and smearing parents, including families of color, black families and Hispanic families that were helping to lead the pushback against this. And they were trying to make up accusations about their finances and personal lives in a mailer that they sent to every household. It was a glossy mailer. No joke. And my friend Joy Pullman over at The Federalist wrote about this, because I sent her the flyer that I'd received in my mailbox. And they went after all of this. Like their plan that was in 2018 was called the CCAP plan, the Cultural Competence Action Plan. And you had to, it included a tip line where students could snitch on students if they felt that someone was not acting in racial harmony or something like that. I mean, it was to the point, in fact, they said microaggressions and discriminatory behavior would be logged in a permanent digital record for students. They also wanted to offer state crime victim grants I'm not kidding you. That's where all this was. So this is what parents were fighting back against. So this grifter comes in from NBC, and parents successfully pushed back to the point where we took over the school board in successive landslide victories. I mean landslide, where the conservative candidates for school board got over 83% of the vote. That was the lowest. 83, 85, and something like 92%. It was crazy. So there wasn't, all of this is like fabrication and lies from the left. The left has been targeting this school district because this school district, this county in which I live in, is the largest urban red county and the last large urban red county in America. And they've been targeting this county because if they can flip it, you can prove that there is a blueprint for taking Texas. They did this in Colorado, and they ran up against parents in Texas. And parents push back. When you start messing with our kids, you see a whole different type of activist come out. And that's what they met here. So they've been working with NBC. They had NBC driving their cars throughout subdivisions here in my town, recording the homes of the parents. They had a reporter illegally enter. They trespassed this NBC production team. And I have the video of it in case anybody wants to go toe-to-toe. I haven't released it because it shows some identifying factors on the outside of the home. But they actually trespassed into the home of one of the parents that was having a meeting with some of the other parents about fighting this. NBC actually trespassed in this parent's home, and they had to be escorted out, and it's all on camera. Audio as well. Unbelievable, right? That's the extent to which they sank for all this. And in the meantime, they decided to have a person. They said that they had a parent that was their avatar for all of this. And it was a woman that they interviewed and they featured who doesn't live in my town, doesn't have kids in the school district, and doesn't pay taxes here. Not kidding you. I once disagreed with this person on Facebook and they challenged me to meet up with them like offline. I'm not even joking. I was like, oh my gosh, is this Ozarks? Like, what is happening here? But that's all of that is missing in the NBC grifter book and podcast. Now, why am I bringing this up? Because the DOJ has announced that they're getting involved in our school district. They've been investigating to see if there's any kind of civil rights violations. This is the federal government's vengeance against parents who successfully take over their school board from the CRT DEI craziness. And it all just happened to coincide with this grifter's book coming out and NBC's involvement. And interestingly enough, a lot of the people that were interviewed in the book and elsewhere are also activists on other groups nationally that have been working with the progressive parent group in Southlake. None of this is disclosed. That's just the tip of the iceberg. So in your town, you need to watch out for this. The fight isn't over just because you win and you take over your school board. The fight isn't over just because you defeat a plan to indoctrinate your kids using your tax dollars in your public schools. Because now what the Biden administration and what Obama Biden before them did have proven is that they will absolutely abuse the authority of their federal agencies to go after and try to rectify, undo free and fair elections to penalize people who make their will known at the ballot box. You see it happening with a number of other issues, so it shouldn't surprise you that it happens with education, even in a suburban school district. We're going to have more on this because now it's got my full attention. And they got their asses kicked once. I guess they want to have another narrative fight and lose again. I don't know. But this is what you got to watch out for in your towns. You always have to be vigilant. That's the price of freedom, and we're blessed to be able to work for that. How is it possible that America could run short of amoxicillin? Amoxicillin is like the Swiss Army knife of antibiotics because it treats so many different types of infections. Doctors prescribe it for ear, nose, throat infections. It treats lower respiratory infections, sinusitis, which I've had before, skin infections, UTIs. So again, how could America run short on it? Antibiotics come from China and India. And if you or a family member get sick and there's no amoxicillin, now what? So that's why I have a medical emergency kit from the Wellness Company. I've used it for strep before. It comes with amoxicillin and it's in your kit now when you need it. So this is not a first aid kit. It's like an urgent care in your house with essential prescriptions. And it comes with those essential prescriptions to treat over 39 medical issues. It's doctor prescribed antibiotics for infections of all types, like strep throat, pneumonia, UTIs, bronchitis, so much more. Plus, you have a doctor's guide so you know exactly when and how to use each prescription. You've got your medications, no waiting to see the doctor, no lines at the pharmacy. Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit. So order yours online in minutes and they'll rush it to your door. Get 15% off at twc.health/Dana and use promo code Dana. That's promo code Dana at twc.health/Dana.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
I believe if government were to now say, we just made a finding that there's a new virus and everyone should do X, Y, and Z, the amount of compliance with X, Y, and Z would be much, much lower than it was at the beginning of COVID, because people do not trust the government, especially on this issue, the way they did at the beginning. And that would be a complicating factor, right? When you have people who just don't listen, because government had no capacity to enforce any of this. You must wear a mask. And people wore masks in New York. But if they said, I'm not wearing a mask, there was nothing I could do about it. You must close your private business. I won't. Well, there was nothing I could really do about it. It was really all voluntary.
He literally signed the New York State, it was the PAWS Act, the PAWS Executive Order. He literally signed that, and that was a literal directive that literally mandated that businesses have to close. Oh my God. He signed that. Do you know what that means? He signed it with his own hands, holding a pen of his own volition, signing his own name to it. He signed it. Oh my gosh. I mean, they called it, Cuomo puts New York on pause. He did that. I mean, I've got a list here, all the mandates. Do we want to spend all the time going over this? I mean, you know, because it started in March. He started doing this in March. I mean, he had the PAWS Act. That was just one of the many executive orders, and that was signed on March 18th. And he also pushed the workforce density mandate and mandated to where no more than 25% of a firm's workforce can be in the office. He did that. On March 20th, he signed another executive order ordering all non-essential businesses statewide to close. Do you want me to keep going on and on? I'm not even getting into the nursing home mandates. Not even getting into that. He had a lot. He had a lot in here. So for him to say that it was voluntary and that he didn't have any kind of authority over it is asinine. He's ignoring, we all remember this, he's ignoring what he signed when he was governor. He signed all this stuff. He also signed the mandate that was ordering these virus patients into nursing homes that ended up killing an inordinate amount of the elderly, including several of my friends' parents. So, yeah, he's now trying to say I didn't have anything to do with that. But he was really excited to take credit for it at the time, remember? We have a whole hour, second hour on the way. You don't want to miss it coming up. So there's a company that I just started using called Ammo Squared, and Ammo Squared helps you stay stocked up on ammunition, like automatically. It's a truly automated system. You set it and you forget it. It's an ammo purchasing program, and you can pick whatever caliber you want. You can set your budget. You can select your shipping, and that's it. And the cool thing is that it builds up, your ammunition builds up over time, and it's stored in this climate-controlled warehouse, and it sends it automatically when you want it, when you have it selected to send. And ammunition is a hard asset. I mean, it's something that's tangible. I think we all remember the uncertainty, like back in 2019, 2020, when there were certain calibers that were kind of hard to find. And we ended up calling, we were calling some of our retail friends and saying, when do you get a shipment of this? Can we get some? Can we lay claim to some when it comes in? And in times of uncertainty and inflation, the value of all this stuff only goes up. So Ammo Squared is there to help smooth out the rough spots of ammunition availability. It's like an ammo 401k or something like that. You set it up, you have ammo for that rainy day when store shelves are empty and ammo's hard to find. So you can learn more and you can sign up today at ammosquared.com and ensure that you're prepared for whatever may come your way. That's ammosquared.com.
Hi, gays! I love seeing so many humans who can top their field while still being power bottoms. Not to mention what it feels like to be in a room with this many men and not need mace. I love the gay community. In fact, I was in love with a homosexual. It was my first love. I tried to convert him for years, but now I know conversion therapy doesn't work. Did you hear me, Mike Pence? I said conversion therapy isn't real.
This is so cringe. Is this from like
Even
6 years ago? No,
it
it's not.
On you.
So this is actually from literally what, yesterday?
I think so.
I like what my friend Kurt Schlichter said. Take that, Mike Pence, in May 2024. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Juan really does not like J-Law, which we just learned. Jennifer Lawrence, who I do think tries too hard to be edgy. It's kind of, but why are you bringing up Mike Pence now? I mean, that would have been maybe, first off, it was flat and it sounded too contrived to be entertaining. It was just like, secondly, Why? He's not even an issue now. You have nobody else that you can hit? That's it? That's all you got? That's all you got? Is that? Okay. I mean, that maybe would have been mildly amusing in, hell, when? 2008? No, sorry, 2016? 6 years ago? Yeah. But now it's just like, really? She knows what's up. She's keeping up with the times, guys. Good grief. So welcome back to the show. Top of this second hour now. You can listen coast to coast. You can watch the simulcast as well. Channel 347 DirecTV. We put this up because it's, first off, I thought that was so cringe. I haven't watched any of her films in a long time. And then third is, isn't June the rainbow month, like where everything's rainbow, right? Yes. It's the Pride month, which I don't get. Like, I don't get this trend. Is it a trend anymore? It's been been some years of everyone getting like a flag. This is not a damn video game, right? So indulge me for 5 seconds. I'm wearing a purple top for you people today, so you're going to indulge me. I got a new shirt, so it's not all black because some of you wouldn't stop complaining. So indulge me. So like, you know, if I play just what I'm playing du jour, I get into these ruts with games. Yes, I casually play. I crochet and I like to play first person shooters and shoot monsters in the face. It's fun. And blow them up and, you know, it's fun. Anyway, I get into these things where I only want to play one thing for a little while and then I'll get bored of it. And, you know, sort of lately it's been Darktide. And, you know, you get certain achievements and you get little frames around your avatar when you go in to play, and people can see who you are in the game lobby and you're identified. And I'm not going to give you guys any identifying factor, so you just go ahead and stop asking that right now. It's never going to happen. If we come across each other, it just happens. But I've got a frame that celebrates how many kills I've made, and I've got another frame that talks about my level as this particular character and all the, you know, all this stuff. You get little flags, right? They're like little flags, little things that you put on the side of your name so that when people are playing with you, they can kind of immediately gauge your level of competency at this game, right? That is the only thing in real life that I have to compare the sex flag to, because that's what it is. Let's be real. It's a sex flag, okay? The only thing different between like some of this stuff and then... No, I'm not going to talk about that video that was circulating on the internet yesterday that accidentally flew into my timeline and autoplayed, and I can't unsee it now. Please let there be eye bleach. It involved a gas station, Kane.
Oh, I know which one.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Don't you dare look for it, any of you. For real, I'm saving your purity here. Anyway, it is a sex flag, and I don't understand why everything has to be so over the top and... And there are, I think it even makes some gay people angry because they're like, my gosh, I don't want people coming into my house and seeing everything rainbow. Like, first, that's tacky. And then secondly, why? Because that's when everything from like mouthwash to toothpaste to regular everyday products, all these corporations are like, wait a minute, this has nothing to do with them trying to include anyone. This is them showing that they're bending a knee to the cultural zeitgeist. That's what it is. That's exactly what it is. And Kane, you've seen it too. Like, you go into stores and everything, like Goldfish crackers, a cracker has rainbow. Well, this is the sex cracker. I don't know how, like, that's what it is. It's a flag that shows what you like to do with your private bits, right? Just reduce it down to the most simplest explanation. That is what it is. Do you need a flag for that? You know what I'm saying? Like, I like bean sprouts in my fried rice. Where's my flag for that? You know what I'm saying? Like, where's that? If I like my coffee black and bitter like my heart, where's my flag for that? I'm just asking. If lemon is your favorite fruit, do you get a special flag for that? Kane loves tamales, and he's quite good at making them when his mom's there. He's very good at making them. Do you get a flag for that? Does your mom have a tamale flag? I'm just asking. Like, if you can get a flag for how you have sex, where are the flags for everything else? And can you have multiple flags? Right? True, right?
Seems that way.
I'm saying. It seems like it. I just want to know why a cheddar cracker has to do sex marketing. Like, you get a cracker because you're going to eat that cracker. It's a cheddar. You know what I'm talking about? Goldfish crackers, the baked whatever, a snack that smiles back. You get a cracker and you're eating. Why does it have to be like, look, we're pride in sex? That's what it is. Intercourse. Don't make me get more specific than that. You know what I mean? What does that have to do with a cheddar cracker? Like what? Like, does that, are you virtue signaling? Like, I'm just thinking how this works in public. People think that you hate them until you whip out your rainbow crackers and you take a bite and then that person's like, they like how I have sex. Yes. Is that what it is? Validation? You have to have these outward indicators of validation. Wait a minute. I need to showcase that I support you having sex this way. Here's my goldfish cracker, my rainbow mouthwash. Just going to coat myself in rainbows. Do you see what I mean? It's weird. All the people who are like, just be who you are. Well, you can't be, because they also are telling you that you have to be who you are, but also signal who you are to everyone on God's green earth. And that everyone has to signal back or something. I don't know. So we're getting into the rainbow month. And it's a whole month. It's a month in which you also have Memorial Day. Memorial Day gets a day. What are you typing? What are you typing? Are you typing a response? Go ahead and say it. Just say it.
It's just Mental Illness Visibility Month. Why can't we just call it what it is?
And then don't even get me started on the trans thing. By the way, their flag colors are heinous, like pastels.
There's a new
blue
one with like
pink.
An umbrella on it or something. It's really weird. It's like a new design.
What?
With like an umbrella thing. Yeah.
For what?
I'm not kidding. I just saw it like the other day. So it's like a new pride flag to include, I guess, some other group that wasn't previously included. Like
who else could not? I mean, they've literally got dead burnt lesbians, two spirits.
I know. They also have a plus sign, which means.
Oh, I just saw it. It's weird. What, I don't even understand.
You would think
the
symbols plus sign,
and
though, would cover everybody else, right? Like, it's the plus sign.
I just think it's so, like, the trans people are like, oh my gosh, my color's not represented in the rainbow. It's a rainbow, you stupid moron. Just assume. And also, why do you even need that? Why do you even need the flat? Why? I don't know. We're just getting, it's that marketing month where all these companies are going to act like, That's what it is. So, in all of this, so we've got this coming up. Can we talk about, I had this up earlier, the Caitlin Clark thing. I don't follow professional basketball. I don't really follow a lot of college basketball anymore. I definitely don't follow women's basketball. Don't hate me. I just don't. All I know is that Caitlin Clark, there's all of this angst around her, and I'm trying to figure out why. And I saw this headline. It said, Caitlin Clark's race is a huge thing and her rise in popularity, claims WNB star Asia Wilson, quote, boils my blood. And I guess she's mad because Clark has signed all these high-level deals before she's even played in the WNBA. And I guess Wilson is saying that it's racist because Clark is more marketable. She's saying that she thinks Clark is more marketable because she's white. Is that what she's claiming? Why are people so mad at Caitlin Clark? Someone explain this to me. Steve, you're a sports dude. You follow this stuff. Why are they so mad at her?
She's got the most endorsement deals of any WNBA player ever, and she probably will be the best women's basketball player ever to live so far. So she's rightfully deserved them all, but I don't know why.
And she's white.
Yeah, but everything that I've been seeing into what Steve just said, she's like one of the best players ever, if not the best. So that right there, why are they ignoring that? Why is Wilson ignoring that and these other critics ignoring that and just focusing on her race? That to me seems the racist thing about this.
You think the left was about merit and ability? That's weird.
Well, I just thought maybe in athletics, maybe.
No. We see how men compete with women. That's what the left is about. They don't care about anything else. They care about narrative. They care about agenda.
What were you going to say, Steve?
For perspective, I mean, she holds the scoring record in not just women's, but men's basketball. She's the most point scorer of all time in any basketball college program ever.
Wow. With men and women.
Yep.
Wow.
I say
okay, so that's really significant.
It's jealousy.
Yeah, it seems like it's jealous. It seems like these chicks would be jealous of her. Yeah, she apparently is going to, she got a deal with Nike. She's going to get $28 million over 8 years. It's apparently the richest sponsorship contract for a women's basketball player. She's got signature shoes, all this stuff. I don't know why all these broads are mad at her then. Like Asia Wilson is just apparently just going on and on and on. Like, she's complaining all over Instagram, and she's, you know, and she, Wilson signed, she signed a thing with Gatorade though. Why is she mad? Like, she's got her own high level multi-million dollar sponsorship deals. Why is she mad? You know, I hate this thing that's promoted sometimes, particularly amongst women, that there's like a scarcity of opportunity. Why is she getting mad? If Clark is good, it seems like Clark is good. And as Steve said, you know, she's earned everything that she's gotten. If she's a leading point scorer in men's and women's ball, then I don't get it. This is goofy. This needs to stop, because you know what? You're having people really pay attention to WNBA, like really start to pay attention to it. And then you're going to drown it with unnecessary racial strife, because that's not about race. It's about jealousy. But it's harder for women to come out and say that they're jealous because it's a younger woman that's out there who's making better deals and getting more attention and bringing more eyes to the league. It's easier for them to make the to say that it's racism than it's just pure jealousy. So they wrap their jealousy in racism so that they can feel vindicated about it, and it can feel more virtuous and less petty. That's the truth of the matter. We have more on the way as we roll towards the bottom of this hour. And coming up, we're going to talk about Dexter Taylor's case with his attorney, because he just got sentenced to 10 years yesterday. Venu Varghese, we're going to talk to him coming up. Black Rifle Coffee, I had two cups. I don't even know what it was. I just said, give me whatever's strong. And I saw Dark Roast on the bag. It was a new bag that was open. And I feel like I could probably like Hulk out right now. That's all I know. I needed to wake up this morning. It was like the weather's changing. I was sleepy. You know how it is. Black Rifle Coffee is the best coffee that you can get in America. It is so good. And a lot of people, a lot of big coffee out there, they're very uncomfortable by the presence of Black Rifle Coffee because they're mainstreaming everything that we love about the USA. And I mean, it's literally called Black Rifle. So, you know, I love it. Veteran owned, veteran operated. They hire retired and active duty, and they serve premium coffee to people who love America. They get the best beans. Every bag's roasted right here in the US of A. You got ground, you got whole bean, you got K-cups, you got ready to drink. And you can also find kettles, grinders, mugs, and so much more. Now, you can join the Black Rifle Coffee Club. I sincerely hope you do this. This is the best way to get it. You're going to save more than the bougiest brand. You're going to save more getting coffee with Black Rifle Coffee Club than you would buying it at the store, buying any coffee at the store, because you pick your roast, frequency of shipment, they send it to your doorstep for free. It's awesome. And you can try it for yourself today. BlackRifleCoffee.com. Make your order of coffee today and get 20% off using code Dana. That's 20% off code Dana, BlackRifleCoffee.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Ooh, 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 a record number of Americans are expected to travel by car this Memorial Day weekend, and airports could be busier than they've ever been since 2005, according to an estimate released by AAA. They're anticipating 43.8 million people will travel 50 miles or more from home over the holiday weekend, surpassing pre-pandemic levels. My favorite thing is not being on the road. I'm going to just grill all kinds of meats, and that's what I'm going to do. I don't need to go road trip anymore. I don't need to go. See, I'm not driving. We live too far away to like really have a road trip to go see family. So, but a lot of people are going to be traveling. So plan accordingly. This Judge Judy is suing the National Enquirer for defamation over the Menendez brothers article. Things I don't care about for 500, Alex. This is crazy. Two Missouri women. It's not Florida. Missouri women be giving them Florida ladies a run for their money. Two Missouri women ended up in jail because they brawled over Disney World tickets and a golf cart, said police. Catherine Northrup and Gina Danforth both admitted to police that they punched each other, according to arrest affidavit. Okay, they were vacationing in Florida. They ended up getting into a fight over a golf cart and Disney World tickets. Okay, so why does everything have to escalate to getting the police involved? Can't you just have... Yes, you shouldn't do this if you're an adult, but can't you just have some playground justice? You know what I'm saying? Like, can't two women just slap fight with each other over a golf cart and just not, and then just walk away and be like, okay, well, we got in a fight and now we're not in a fight anymore. Can we just like leave it at that? Do we have to escalate everything to get the law involved? golly, people, take a beating or give a beating, but don't get the law involved, right? It's a t-shirt. Let's see, this, the portal, have you guys heard about this? So there's a portal that connects New York and Dublin, and it's in real time, and it's like they use the internet, and they bridge, it's like a live stream. So they live stream what's happening in Dublin to New York and New York to Dublin. Well, there's some shenanigans because people have been doing some offensive stuff, whether they're flashing people front or back. There's also like somebody hijacked it and put the 9/11 towers, the attack on the towers. I don't know how they did that. Yeah, they said it was designed to bring the world closer together. But guess what? People will troll each other. And that's exactly what's happening. Apparently, there was somebody very drunk and grinding against the portal. Yeah, this is the... So coming up, Second Amendment case. We got to talk with Dexter Taylor's attorney because he just got sentenced to 10 years yesterday over nothing. We'll talk. The people who help bring you free radio, ReadyWise. ReadyWise wants to make sure that you're always prepared in case anything goes sideways, right? You always want to make sure that you're able to feed your family. And the thing I like about ReadyWise is that everything is USA from start to finish. Like the stuff that's grown, the way they pack it, where they pack it, the people that pack it. Everything from start to finish is right here in the US of A. So you're supporting American jobs. And these are high quality, premium survival meals packed at their state of the art plant right here in the US. So whether it's a sudden storm, power outage, or maybe you just, I don't know. I know people who like pack this stuff when they go hunting. Instead of, they don't want sandwiches, or my grandpa would always do Spam. I kid you not, like literally Spam and tea. That's what he would take, a gallon of tea and cans of Spam. He would take these though, if he had had them when he hunted. Supply chain disruption, whatever it is, you're going to have peace of mind because you got to have good food, nutritious food. I mean, they got 2000 plus calories, 50 plus grams of protein per day. They have a special with their 1 month emergency supply two bucket bundle, 36 pouches of premium survival food, no refrigeration required, freeze dried, dehydrated, easy to prepare, just add water, 25 year shelf life. Now is the time to prepare. Visit ReadyWise.com. Use code Dana20 and you'll save an additional 20% off any regularly priced item. ReadyWise.com, code Dana20.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen coast to coast. You can also stream the radio program if you're not listening terrestrially, and watch the simulcast on channel 347 DirecTV. We're also on X, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook. We're everywhere. So welcome back. We've been just following this case of Dexter Taylor, who is a Second Amendment hobbyist. He's an innocent dude, no record, living in New York. And he was sentenced to 10 years for his hobby, in New York State. This is a crazy story, especially when what he's doing is federally legal. I mean, it's I've written books about this. What he's doing under 18 USC 922, multiple subsections, OPNR, you're not required for your hobby of creating a firearm to have a license or to serialize it unless you're selling it, which, by the way, no one ever claimed that Dexter Taylor, who we spoke to back in February, was doing. It was all for his own enjoyment. And I don't even think he, when we talked to him, I don't even think he actually fired everything that he actually made. But this has long been federally protected, longer than New York has tried to criminalize it, which is where I think the rub comes in. And this is what we're going to talk about with Dexter's attorney, Venu Varghese, who is a Wall Street criminal defense attorney, former prosecutor. He's an editorialist as well, and he's representing Dexter Taylor. Venu, a pleasure to have you back. The news that came in yesterday, and we've talked about the case for those unaware, he is simply a hobbyist who likes to build his own firearms. And even though federal law has long stated that this is protected, New York rather recently, compared to the length of time with federal law and the history of our Second Amendment, said, no, he's not allowed to do that. Even though we don't really give out licenses for this, you got to get a license. No record. He's a hobbyist. No accusation that he'd ever tried to sell. No evidence that he ever tried to sell. That was not even an issue in court, nor was the Second Amendment, which apparently you were also told to not bring up in court, gets a 10-year sentence yesterday. Give us the latest in your reaction to the sentence that he received.
Dana, it hurts. It's sad. We had asked, as his lawyers, we put in a sentencing submission with, we received 24 letters in support. I mean, this is a great human being. I mean, he used to teach code for free. He's an engineer. He went to one of the top high schools in the country. He then went to Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. No criminal record, a model citizen. And the judge, because she had to punish him for having the audacity, let's put aside the Second Amendment for a second, but the audacity to exercise his Sixth Amendment right to a fair and public trial. Well, it was a public trial, it wasn't fair, but he had the audacity to exercise that right. She punished him by basically giving him three times what the minimum sentence would be. Now, the minimum for what he was convicted of under New York state law was 3.5 years. The prosecutors, the district attorney's office in Brooklyn recommended 10, which was excessive. I mean, for a guy with no history, not selling them, no intent to use unlawfully in any way whatsoever, he had them in his home, and they saw 10. They called him a narcissist for talking about the Second Amendment, for trying to exercise his Second Amendment rights, and they said that a sentence of 10 years was appropriate. I countered that this is, forget the legal arguments, forget about the constitutional arguments. Just take a look at him and whether this is a man that should be put in jail. Look, the statute requires him to be put in jail. It's a mandatory minimum of 3.5 years. And that's what the judge could have done. But she was angry because she got mocked on social media.
I read that. She indicated that she didn't want to read all of the comments. And she had apparently sounded like she had her feelings hurt because she was getting a lot of criticism from people on social media. How is that something a judge says in a trial?
It's beyond me. I mean, she would have been better off not bringing that up at all, because listen, when you go into a courthouse, you have to clear security, right? There are metal detectors. When we got up, so everybody cleared security. There were people who were, he has family there, he had friends there. And there were other individuals who came who had just been following the case. So there were people that Dexter didn't know who showed up to court. And then they created this additional layer of security by making everyone else check in their phones. In state court, you're allowed to bring in your cell phone.
Yeah.
And so they made them check in their court, and the judge started off by saying, this proceeding shall not be recorded in any way. And she was upset. And I called it whining, that she was whining, that she was criticized on social media, and then proceeded. But then she said, to be clear, there's no ties directly to the defendant of some of these things. Now, I was expecting her to say threat. There were a ton of extra security, not just New York State court officers, but NYPD and detective investigators from the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office. But no threat was mentioned. All she said was that she was criticized. And then she goes on without any explanation, except for saying that you knew that this was the law and you chose not to get a license. So it's a paperwork violation. I'm going to give you 10 years. And this is after we argued he has parents that are in their 80s. And one of the arguments I put forth is that he takes care of them, that you give him a harsh sentence, it's going to increase the chances of them dying without seeing him a free man. And they were in court. He has a 16-year-old daughter that, you know, he's raising with her mother. I mean, this is just, it's outrageous.
It's overly outrageous. Punitive. She wanted to make an example out of Dexter Taylor. And the theater that she incorporated with this. I was also reading too, during jury selection. Tell me about this, because there was the claim that she was trying to rehabilitate potential jurors that had demonstrated some kind of bias against Taylor. What was that process like? What did you witness?
So our jury selection took longer than Trump's, just so you know.
Wow.
It went over a week and a half. I mean, there were some delays because of some scheduled time off and all this stuff. But the first 2 days of jury selection, I was able to eliminate a number of jurors because upon further questioning, it showed they had real strong feelings about guns. Mm. Well, there were other jurors who said they didn't have strong feelings about guns. well, you know, then the people that have strong feelings about guns, either way, right, should not be on the jury.
Right.
So clearly something happened. She also happens to be married to the district attorney's top fundraiser. I mean, there was just, you can't even make this stuff up, you know?
Isn't it this grounds for a mistrial? Because it sounds like, I don't know. It just doesn't, I honestly, when I hear from you about these details and I read about some of the others, this does not sound like what I would describe as a fair shake.
So there's a whole aspect of this, which I've spoken about on different, you know, podcasts that I've been on and shows and talking about this, of how this case proceeded. You know, this case, see, Dexter Taylor is a bad look for the district attorney's office, for the state of New York, because he is a black conservative who believes in the Second Amendment, right? A model citizen. And so initially the prosecutor was a white prosecutor. He was, you know, he was cordial, he was friendly. He was, you know, he was just whatever, doing his job, he was competent. And then a month before trial, it gets reassigned to a black prosecutor. And what they were doing, and this isn't new, DA's offices, U.S. attorney's offices, whenever there's a defendant of color and me defending them, you know, they switch things up so that it takes away that aspect that there was a racial bias. We had a white judge. And then all of a sudden, the day that we schedule for trial in front of her, she's unavailable. And we get sent to the only black female judge in the courthouse in Brooklyn.
None of that sounds like coincidence in New York.
No, it just it's very, it's bizarre. And so I didn't know her, like, you know, I never had dealings with her. She's an ex-prosecutor. I am too. We were in the same office, but we didn't overlap. She's older than me. And so, you know, she was pleasant the first 2 days, and then clearly something happened. And then all of a sudden it was absolute nastiness from that point forward. She, in terms of what you asked about, she wouldn't allow me to ask follow-up questions that she had previously allowed me to ask, which then got a number of jurors and their true feelings out.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the jury selection, you know, we knew we were in for it. But look, going into all this, and I think Dexter has been open about this, we expected to lose in New York State. We expected to lose at the trial. We expect to lose in the intermediate appellate court. And then we expect to lose in New York State High Court. The only chance we get is to get this case over to federal court.
Because this gets into, and this is kind of the one of the big things that I wanted to bring up with you. This gets into New York's law with regard to licensing. And I hate the phrase ghost gun, because it suggests that there's an illegal activity that is underway that's not actually illegal. No one's selling anything. If you're making a gun at home and you sell it, you got to serialize it. If you're making enough to, you know, to make up a portion of your income, ATF already has regulations on this. It's already, you know, federal statute. Then, you know, you have to get your FFL. He wasn't doing any of these things. That wasn't even part, from what I understand, of the state's charge against him. So there's that rub between what federal law is and what it allows, and this protects this activity, and what New York is trying to do. And that he, and from what I understand, he's done this longer than they're forbidding, than they've forbidden it. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. So they're trying to retcon him into becoming a felon. That's ultimately, is that what you're, what this is going to be based on when it goes up for appeal?
Well, the 2022 case of Bruin versus New York, or the licensing regulation of New York, basically found New York's licensing regime unconstitutional.
Right.
Because basically, you could only get a license if you showed just cause. They found that not consistent with the Second Amendment and what the founders envisioned. They did say that this doesn't preclude a state from licensing or setting up, you know, licensing requirements.
And that works if they grant the licenses, which apparently they don't, as you argued in court.
Correct. So we knew, so what New York State judges were doing after Bruin is, because everyone was upset about it. Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York, Mayor Adams, they called the Supreme Court irresponsible for allowing, you know, that New York will become a war zone with guns after this. So what they did is basically create a new system, which was more of the old system. And they changed it. And like, this is how obnoxious it is. It went from just cause to good moral character. And I mean, think about the state determining
that's so arbitrary.
Who has good moral character. And they brought a guy on during trial from the licensing regime. He couldn't explain.
It's a state that will penalize you over pronoun usage, which could impact your good moral character measure. We're running short on time. We're talking to Vinu Varghese, who's the attorney for Dexter Taylor. How is Dex doing?
He's doing great. I mean, he's just such a champ. I mean, this is, as he said, he made this amazing, he gave a statement in court yesterday, and we've ordered the transcript, and I'll share it with you when I get it. It just bears repeating. He talked about how this is the time to challenge the state, but to do so respectfully. And, you know, he even called the adversaries, honored adversaries. He's such a gentleman, and he says that we cannot allow ourselves to be subservient to what is natural right of, and he used the term Christendom, of the law.
Right. So this is going for appeal. Do you expect this to go before SCOTUS?
It depends. It depends of whether we win. So we got to go up to the New York State Court and then down back to federal court and the district court. If we win here at the federal district court level, and the state doesn't take an appeal, we may not need to go to SCOTUS.
And he has to sit
but
in
if
prison.
We do, we do.
He has Correct. To sit in prison this whole time, which could be years Correct. Waiting for this.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Dexter Taylor's yes. playing the long game here. And I think everyone else needs to support him and play it with him, because whatever this case, no pressure, Vinu, but I know however this case ends up, that's going to be just a major impact on our Second Amendment rights. We're out of time this hour, but I would love to have you back and keep following up
Thank
on
you.
This
Thank
as there
so
are
much.
Developments. There's a Gibson Go. We're going to make sure we include that as well, because he's going to need the monetary support more than anything, because these are very expensive cases to litigate. Vinu Varghese, thank you so much for fighting the good fight and keeping us updated. We'd love to have you back. Thank you.
Thank you.
Of course. Patriot Mobile is the only Christian conservative cell phone service in the country. They want to save you money. They're going to bring you great service, but they're also not going to use your dollars to advocate for DEI or gun control or anything like that. In fact, Patriot Mobile, they support the issues you support, like they actually do, and they put momentum and money behind it as well. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're going to get a plan tailored for you. What families of all sizes, businesses of all sizes, singles, dinks, doesn't matter. Free activation using code Dana, and you're going to get the best service in your area without funding the left, because they have dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks. Keep your phone, keep your number, upgrade. The choice is yours. And they have a 100% U.S.-based customer service team. You're supporting American jobs from start to finish. Visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT and use promo code Dana to get free activation. Make that switch today. PatriotMobile.com/Dana, 972-PATRIOT.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
I am amazed at the story. A Florida man is accused of spitting on a Walmart employee during a squabble. Now, he maintains that he was sneezing. Flagler County. Channing Cooks. You can't have two last names. And one of the last names be your first name. That's not right. Florida man was arrested. He spit on this employee, deputy said. Channing Cooks, 37, of Palm Coast, was taken to Flagler County Jail on a battery charge, because if you spit on someone, this battery. The battery complaint, it happened with a Walmart employee. She said she was involved in an altercation with the customer, and he spit in her face. It was caught on the store's surveillance cameras. Because he tried to return merchandise without a receipt. And he maintains that it was a misunderstanding and that he had unintentionally sneezed on her. And he was trying to exchange baby formula. And she said he spat in her face repeatedly while yelling, "I have a cold." I'm going to say that I believe probably the Walmart employee.
There's video.
Because there is video. And I don't, the wordage, well, it's, you can imagine. So he's in the pokey on battery charge. That's Kane. He was like trying to get her sick with a cold. We know that.
Oh, yeah.
A Florida man known as El Gato was arrested for stabbing and striking a man with a golf club, officials say. Oh, my gosh. This was in Tampa. He beat the victim with a club, stabbed him in the neck. Julio Hernandez approached the victim, began hitting him with the club. This guy's 54 years old. And he stabbed the guy in the head, stole his wallet and gold chain, And according to NBC affiliate there, the victim was found bleeding, taken to a hospital for treatment. Officials found the metal golf club broken into three pieces at the scene. That's pretty crazy. So he was arrested. He's known as El Gato. And so he's charged with attempted second-degree murder, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, armed robbery with a firearm or deadly weapon, no bond issued. Yeah, that sounds like a little over the top. A Florida man was arrested for throwing a beer bottle at a fan at a Rays game. Fans get really wound up at stuff. This guy, St. Petersburg, Florida, Eric Pfeiffer, 29, was in an argument with another person at Tropicana Field. The Rays were taking on their in-division rival, the Yankees, and then there was an argument, an escalation. Pfeiffer threw a beer bottle into the stands. It hit a third separate bystander, cut his head, and he was not even in the argument. So he's was released on $5,000 bond. Whew. Third hour on the way. Stick with us.
Last weekend, we had Queers for Palestine think they could take over the intersection going into Disney World. Florida Highway Patrol got them off in, I think, 11 minutes. So that's I think that's a world record. So if you think you can do that and get away, I mean, look, there's so much what they're doing at Columbia, all this stuff that's just crazy, but making people wait in traffic is no bueno. We are not just going to, I don't care what your cause is. You do not cause people to wait in traffic, especially in areas that already have traffic. So I think 11 minutes that the FHP Orlando got them out may be the new record.
They just drag you right out of the road in Florida.
But
they
I'm
don't
sure
care.
Now that that gone,
good on them. Good on them. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. Top of our third hour. What is the Queers for Palestine thing? Yeah, you're gonna totally get murdered. What are you doing? Why would you do that? Why? Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash with you, top of this third hour. I don't get it. I don't get why people advocate against their own self-preservation. That's a weird one for me. Now, Harvard's encampment just ended. So Harvard apparently agreed with almost all of their demands. They said they had a peaceful end to their encampment. They negotiated a peaceful end. And even though they literally trumpeted near the daily anti-Semitic remarks and chants and things like that, they harassed Jewish students. They followed Jewish students. They prevented Jewish students from entering into like different buildings. They're still going to get rewarded. And so they agreed to apparently like, I don't know, is it a madrasa now, Harvard? I don't know. They agreed to everything. So now their encampment is ended because they didn't have anybody to pull them off the streets, like blocking the entrance to Disney. I just think I'm made of comments on this. So there you have it. Yeah, I don't know. But I guess you're not hearing a lot anymore about these encampments because the colleges are ending and everybody's going home. So what are they going to do? What are y'all going to do? What's going to happen? Don't know. And in the meantime, we have the ongoing trial in New York, and we got a lot of GOP movement regarding November. Now, I saw this report the other day. There's a lot of rumors over this. I've heard these rumors before, but then I've also heard stuff from people who are like hell-bent on making this not a reality. So I don't know. But there was this report that Trump is considering, even though you have all of these, I think he came out and said Rubio, maybe Burgum, maybe Scott. And apparently now Haley is also considered, I guess she's on the list, the short list, maybe for VP. Axios says that she's under active consideration by Trump's campaign to be his running mate. They said that their relationship remains chilly, but Trump could pick her if he were convinced that she would help him win the presidency and cover tens of millions in legal bills should he lose, you know, the litigation. She can raise money. That's the only reason she would be considered, is because she can raise a lot of money. That's true. Nikki Haley can raise a ton of cash. She's always been a good fundraiser with that regard. So he's trying to deal with a fundraising disadvantage, Trump is. And a lot of the PAC money that he raises has been going towards legal fees. I don't know what the RNC is doing at this point. I know that different states, we've talked about this before, their Republican outfits are broke. So, and we're going into states where you got Democrats that are spending hand over fist in ad buys. You have, you know, $250 million war chest for Democrats right now that they've only just started spending on some abortion ads. So I don't know. He's got a fundraising disadvantage. The other thing is he's got a disadvantage with a structure on the ground. And that is a true thing because I've talked to a number of people who actually work who are associated and do stuff state-based with the campaign that apparently have been pushing to make sure that they have, you know, a campaign head in the state, that they got representation in every county, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's been a disadvantage. Democrats always think about this stuff, though. They always think about ground game. Whereas Republicans always, it's like a secondary consideration for them. So they've got to get serious. And they said that Trump is wanting to attract some of these other, I guess, more moderate Republicans to help pad, you know, the numbers going into November, which she, I guess, would bring. But there are people out there who don't like her that think she was moderate. I mean, she's a good politician in some respects, but she's moderate. And I think that her acumen wasn't the best in terms of how she went about her messaging during the primary. She never actually articulated why she was staying in for as long as she was staying in, because it really wasn't throwing Trump off of anything. Even after DeSantis got out, she was still staying in, and it wasn't even taking any numbers away from him. So it was weird. I don't know. He needs fundraising. She can fundraise. I don't know. But I've been hearing a lot about this from a lot of people. And it's enough to where I think that it's probably the fact that he's considering her is probably true. He had said that she's not under consideration, but I don't know. Didn't he say that about Pence though? It could also be like a red herring, you know, it could also be he's, you know, maybe they're trying to fake everybody out. We'll see. I know Doug Burgum was one that they were considering too, but isn't he, he's just such a moderate. The rumor is that he was going to run in North Dakota. He was going to run as a Democrat, but Democrats don't get elected there. So he ran as a Republican. So I don't know. We'll see. But at some point, I think as we get closer towards the convention, I mean, obviously it'll be announced before the convention, but Scott or I know it can't be Burgum. It can't be him. The best bet, honestly, would be, I think, a Brian Kemp or a Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I don't think it's possible for DeSantis because Trump is domiciled in Florida. DeSantis is in Florida. You can't have two from the same state. Now, someone made the point that it was like that with Cheney and Bush, and then Cheney changed his residency to Montana so that they could run because apparently they were both in Texas. I don't know. I don't see that happening. We'll see. Kemp would be, because Georgia's in play, that would lock up Georgia for him. But I don't know. There are options. There are no options with Democrats. Look at us. We're wringing our hands over our amount of options. Oh, poor Republicans. We have so many people to pick from. Oh, I don't feel bad for us. I don't feel bad for us at all. Democrat, I don't feel bad for them either because they're Democrats, but Democrats are in a really bad position. You have Newsom and Cuomo. That's it. The nursing home killer, and then the guy who took a $100 billion budget surplus and took in a record $55 billion in taxes last year and is now running a $46 billion deficit after spending $24 billion on homeless stuff, spreading it across 30-some-odd programs in the state, not keeping track of any of it, and watching homelessness increase 6% from fiscal year 22 to now. That guy, the blueprint, Democrats' blueprint for America? Yeah, I really don't think that's going to happen either. No. Yeah, I don't feel bad because we got a lot of options. So whenever you, like, everybody's wringing their hands over it, I really don't feel bad, right? Because we have so many options. We got a lot of Republicans on the bench, right? We've done a good job by making sure the bench is staffed up. Whereas Democrats, not so much. Not so much. I wanted to share this story with you. I was going to get to this earlier. I have it under Law and Order. I was going to get to the story of more progressive DAs. So this was in Washington, D.C. And this was back on April 22nd, right? So you have this 18-year-old who apparently took his rifle out in the street and was just shooting up stuff with it. He targeted a car for people at 2:30 a.m. There's all this stuff that was caught on doorbell camera footage. And it's a teenager. It was, you know, in the middle of the night, and he's spraying this neighborhood with bullets. It was just a mile from the U.S. Capitol. Thankfully, nobody was injured or killed. Now, this individual, this 18-year-old, he was released on bail ahead of his trial by the judge, Lloyd Nolan Jr., a self-described woke magistrate judge on the Superior Court in D.C. That's unbelievable. And his decision, undoubtedly, because he was granted pretrial release and home arrest, undoubtedly raised some eyebrows. This judge used to have a public Facebook, and it went private. Because he was bankrolled by Soros. He posted and bragged about how woke he was. And then when all of that started getting out, he privatized his Facebook page. He had donated to another George Soros Open Society Foundation called Gideon's Promise. And he was bragging about restorative justice and essentially wokery, for the lack of a better way to put it. So this 18-year-old sprays this neighborhood in D.C. a mile from the Capitol with bullets. All kinds of, I mean, he's on camera doing it. He's just literally in the middle of the street firing his gun. He gets pretrial release. And you know nothing's, I just have a feeling that there's not going to be anything, any serious penalty. I mean, but thankfully, again, no one was injured or killed. The U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C. was trying to reverse the release. They filed a petition yesterday trying to get him back into custody. And they said that he littered the street with shell casings. If anybody had been out in the street, they'd have been killed. They would have absolutely been killed. And they said house arrest is insufficient. GPS monitoring is insufficient. And they said that, you know, that this pretrial release is not going to work. But the judge was like, well, he doesn't have a criminal history. He's arguing that while the dude is on camera shooting up a street. I'm pretty sure his lack of criminal history has no bearing on the fact that he literally went out and was shooting up a street in the middle of the night, a mile from the Capitol in D.C. This guy's woke. He actually posted a thing. It's it's just black with white lettering, 2019, still woke. He posts that kind of stuff on his Facebook page. This is what's happening. This is why our judicial system is so bad. This is why you have an out-of-control crime rate. Remember, they're trying to tell you that crime has decreased when it hasn't. They've just stopped reporting it. They've stopped pursuing more serious charges. Things are reduced. People are released pretrial. This is why. This is another example of why.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Illinois students hired a bagpiper to follow the high school principal around in a noisy senior prank. This is actually hysterical. And I endorse this type of senior prank. Some of them can be really destructive. So yeah, this high school principal, the seniors pranked him. They hired a professional bagpiper to follow him around and play an assortment of tunes for like an hour last week. So for 1 hour, this guy could not get away from this bagpiper. Bagpiper Scott Whitman came to Richwoods High School dressed in a kilt and a hat, and Billy Robinson is the principal, and it was nonstop. He followed this guy, and they said it was a plan B because they were going to do a mariachi band, but it was out of their price range. So they hired this. That's actually also funny. They said it, I love it. They go, it was around Cinco de Mayo and prices were really high, and they were all based out of Chicago. So plan B ended up working really well. That's hysterical to me. So they got this guy, the Celtic Cross pipes and drums. He played various songs, and followed around, played Amazing Grace, Scotland the Brave. And he goes, we get a fair amount of gigs. This is my first senior prank request. And the principal, I mean, it seems like he's, you know, he was pretty entertained by that. He goes, I thought it was pretty awesome and creative. He goes, so it was all in good fun. So pretty amazing. That has to be like one of the best senior pranks I think I've heard. That's a very good job. All right. So I'm not reading this one. I'm not reading this headline. You can read it if you want to, Kane. Go ahead and read it. Go ahead and read it. Yeah. Well, you sent it. So I feel like this one's yours. You can have it. Tell the good people what they're missing, Kane. Go ahead. This is so blasphemous. I feel like this guy's going straight to hell.
I don't even know
how
I'm going to say this. So a Catholic priest stuns worshipers with his vulgar, wildly vulgar sermon. He claims that Jesus... That Jesus was visibly... turned on.
This guy's going to hell. I can say I feel like he's going to hell. I can say that with a lot of certainty.
I'm with you on that.
I feel confident in that assessment. Yeah, that actually happened. And he kept his job. Yeah. So this a snake on a train caused some problems in Japan. It delayed 2,700 passengers. Now their trains are infamous for always being on time, clean, orderly. And they got it. This is literally like bullet train. A snake was on the train, an 11-car train, and it had to stop, and it was crazy, and everybody's okay. Stick with us.
Ready to grow your intellectual Rolodex? Download the Dana Show podcast and join the ranks of those who refuse to settle for the same old boring content on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Plan that states those jobs that we are in high demand, we could expedite. How do we have a large body of people that are in our city and country that are excellent swimmers, and at the same time, we need lifeguards? And the only obstacle is that we won't give them the right to work to become a lifeguard.
Did he just say what I think he said?
I'm halfway offended.
So that is Mayor Eric Adams, who suggests that illegal immigrants could fill the lifeguard shortage in New York City because, he says, they're excellent swimmers.
What? How would he know?
You realize, first off, that parts of the Rio that are the most crossed are shallow enough to just walk across, number one. Number two, why doesn't he just call them the slur that's in his head? You know, someone's back is damp.
Yeah.
That's what he's basically calling them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And they have a lifeguard shortage. Where the hell are they swimming in Manhattan? Where are they swimming? You know, not East River. That's not, unless you want, like, you know, to run into some dead bodies or, you know, pollution. I don't know.
I'd want them to concentrate on guarding life, you know, on land first. Like, give that a shot. Try that out.
I just cannot believe that he's like, yeah, the lifeguard shortages, because they're great swimmers, you know, the illegals that are coming over. They're great swimmers, clearly. I mean, they got across the Rio, so, you know.
Imagine if Donald Trump said this at a rally or somewhere. If Donald Trump said that these illegals coming over are excellent swimmers, let's give them lifeguard jobs, what would be, at that moment, the media response to that?
That's like saying, I mean, Eric Adams is basically like, let's put them in charge of making tequila, you know, because they're Mexicans. So they must love that tequila, right? Am I right, New Yorkers?
We can make Mexican Coke right here in New York.
Oh my gosh. I saw the headline and I was like, no way he said that. No, he said it. We just played it. Yeah, he did. Yeah, they can be. I just cannot get. Holy cow. Guys, seriously?
It's D different.
It's D different. The swimming. I mean, good night. You can just like walk across it. Wait, but it was. Didn't people get in trouble? Didn't they say that the Border Patrol that was on horses and they had horse reins, and they were accused of having whips, and they tried to ruin their lives and their careers by saying they were racist and whipping people. That this is real, what he said. Yes. Holy cow, do Democrats know what racism is? Do they know when they're being racist? Do they? Yeah, they can come right across the border. I mean, they can just be lifeguards, because clearly those illegals are great swimmers. You know, what, did you see them just swim right across the Rio? It's amazing.
I mean, with Kathy Hochul just last week saying black kids and don't know what computers are.
Yeah, they're doing a bang up job in New York. The governor thinks that black kids don't know what computers are. Right. And the mayor of Manhattan thinks that they should just get all the illegals to be lifeguards, you know, because of the swimming.
If it wasn't real, I don't know if I'd be laughing this hard.
I don't even know what to say. Oh my gosh, this is so bad. Can I hear it one more time? This is so bad.
Oh yeah.
Who says this stuff?
Mayor Adams.
Plan that states those jobs that we are in high demand
job.
We could expedite. How do we have a large body of people that are in our city and country that are excellent swimmers, and at the same time we need lifeguards? And the only obstacle is that we won't give them the right to work to become.
Oh my gosh. The only obstacle is we're not hiring them to be our lifeguards, you know? So, and then you have Nadler, who's like, yeah, we need people to come out here and pick our fruit and vegetables. Oh my gosh. These people. That's an ad. That and Kathy Hochul, those are ads. Where are the Republicans? Where's and Nadler saying what he said? And Pelosi saying what she said? Where, you know what? That should be an ad, Republicans. This one's for free. That's an ad. You want to know what Democrats think of minority families in America? Here it is. These are ads. And the other part of this that really strikes me, I mean, after the racism part, is he thinks that someone's being mean to illegal immigrants by not hiring them as lifeguards. And that's an obstacle because they're not getting hired because people are too stupid to see their value as swimmers. Can you believe it? These people aren't just grabbing them out of the Rio, plucking them right out of the Rio and putting them in pools all around Manhattan. Is that not something?
Si se puede.
Yeah, Bogota. Mm-hmm.
Despacito.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Despacito. Just send Biden out there to. I can't, you guys. That's the Democrat Party right there. That's an ad. And then, you know, you have this audio soundbite 4. I don't know what. What was this? Again, this goes right along with it. This is Biden talking about diversity. Listen.
There is no singular Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander identity and diversity in those cultures, the breadth of achievement and shape the strength and fabric of this country.
What?
What?
I think he had a teleprompter.
Did he?
Hiccup there.
Did he though? He said there's no, I'm going to try to read the transcript, make this make sense.
All right.
There is no singular Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander identity and diversity and those cultures, the breadth of achievement.
Maybe if you read it slower.
There is no singular Asian American,
yeah.
Native Hawaiian,
mm-hmm.
Pacific Islander
right.
identity
hmm.
and diversity
right.
and those cultures,
yeah.
the breadth of achievement.
I got lost right about there.
Yeah, like I got lost like almost part. Immediately.
Yeah.
That didn't help, did it?
No, going slower definitely did not help.
Yeah, it didn't really help. And then you have this from Bernie Sanders, audio soundbite 8, because apparently there's so much racism in medicine that white doctors are just killing minorities. Listen.
That when black, Latino, and Native American patients have access to black, Latino, and Native American doctors, their health outcomes substantially improve. They're more likely to receive preventative services, they're more satisfied with their care, and they're more likely to live longer.
Doesn't that violate a law to not provide people with good care? And also, the Hippocratic Oath and all. So Bernie Sanders is saying black doctors should only be treating black people. Black people should only see black doctors. Okay. Hispanic people should only see Hispanic doctors. right? Asian people should only see Asian doctors, and white people should only see white doctors. Is that what I'm to understand out of this?
But I want to see an Indian doctor.
No, you don't get to, because you're Hispanic.
Hmm.
Half Hispanic. So part of the time you can see a Hispanic doctor, and then you can see a white doctor.
So it sounds like segregation.
Like, well, it's because apparently white people are killing all the minorities in the health care.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming.
I didn't hear about that. But
you know, when they're not getting plucked out of the Rio to go on lifeguard in New York, they're getting killed by white doctors. I don't know, maybe the anatomy is different. Maybe there's something like, you know.
Like webbed toes or something?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. Do you have a forked tongue? Partially, I don't know. Like, that's what they make it sound like. They make it sound like, no, there's different anatomy for the minority patients. That's what they make it sound like when they sit here and go, well, they should be treated only by a doctor of their specific race or ethnicity. E pluribus unum. Our country came together to reject all this stuff. You see how stupid all the DEI stuff is? It's so dumb. It's so dumb. I cannot believe we have this many sound bites on this. Wow.
They're going to try and make this a thing too, I think.
What?
Going into the election.
The medicine stuff?
Oh, yeah. Trump, they've already talked about some of the stuff that Trump says. There are some things we can consider when cutting the behemoth that is Medicare and Medicaid. And people only think about losing coverage. They don't think about the benefits of, you know, a smaller government.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, that's smaller government makes, yeah. I'm just, this is who this party is. This is what they're showing you. This is who they are. I have some more audio that I want to play as well. In this, let's see. I have a couple of things here. I wanted to touch on this. This is Kansas City Chiefs kicker who railed against bites. So he's giving the commencement address at this college. And he shows up, gives his address, and it is just an absolute slam. It was at Benedictine College, Harrison Bucker. And he called out gender ideology. He called out DEI. He called out, listen to this. This is so good.
Bad policies and poor leadership have negatively impacted major life issues. Things like abortion, IVF, surrogacy, euthanasia, as well as a growing support for degenerate cultural values and media, all stem from the pervasiveness of disorder. Our own nation is led by a man who publicly and proudly proclaims his Catholic faith, but at the same time is delusional enough to make the sign of the cross during a pro-abortion rally. He has been so vocal in his support for the murder of innocent babies that I'm sure to many people, it appears that you can be both Catholic and pro-choice. Ooh. He is not alone. From the man behind the COVID lockdowns to the people pushing dangerous gender ideologies onto the youth of America, they all have a glaring thing in common. They are Catholic. This is an important reminder that being Catholic alone doesn't cut it. These are the sorts of things we are told in polite society to not bring up. You know, the difficult and unpleasant things. But if we are going to be men and women for this time in history, we need to stop pretending that the Church of Nice is a winning proposition.
Church of Nice. That was a pretty strong address. I don't think you could do something like that at, like, I don't know, Notre Dame. I don't think you could. That's a pretty solid address. I don't know. I was encouraged after I saw all the frat boy summer pop up. I don't know, kind of get the impression that the pendulum might be swinging the other way. We'll see. We have more on the way.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
The U.S. economy has been performing very well lately. We had growth last year of just over 3%, quite a strong year. And it's driven by a number of things. I would point to a very strong labor market where you've got rising employment, you've got rising wages, so disposable income, consumers are spending. Generally, households are in good shape financially. They're not over-levered. And so we see a good picture. Consumer spending has held up very well. As well, business investment has been strong. Businesses are seeing opportunities to invest.
Jerome Powell, what fairy tale book is he reading from? Because that's not... the reality for so many Americans out there. He's saying, oh, the economy's great. Everything's performing so well. And households, they're doing so great. What household? Like, his isn't representative of everybody's. I'm just trying to figure out where he's getting this from. Because that's, again, not at all the reality. Audio soundbite 22. This was from CNBC. Santelli. Inflation is, it expanded much more than they had anticipated that it would just last month. This is audio soundbite 22. Listen.
April read on producer price index, the wholesale inflation gauge, up 0.5% on headline, up 0.5%. That's up 0.5%, and that is the hottest read, well, just since February when it was up 0.6. And if we look at ex food and energy, same number, more than double expectations, as Becky pointed out, up 0.5%. That is the hottest read there. It equals January. You have to go to July of last year to get a hotter read. Another hot read is ex food, energy, and trade. It's up 0.4, exactly double expectations. To find a hotter read, you have to go to January of this year when it was up 0.6.
That doesn't sound like every household's doing great and everybody's just hunky dory. Nope. Doesn't sound like that at all. So where's Jerome Powell getting this information from? That's the million-dollar question. Yeah, where's he getting this? They're trying to gaslight you. They don't even talk about the economy anymore. Bidenomics was such a disaster. They don't even talk about it anymore. He just stays away from it entirely. They're just like, no, it's doing great. We're not going to give you any particulars. That's it. We don't have anything for you. It's just doing great, though. And now they're going to be pushing tax hikes. Audio soundbite 14. Sorry, last point. This enrages me, especially considering everything I paid just last year. Go ahead, play it. It's Gina Yellen.
Well, what President Biden has said, and I certainly strongly agree with it, is that we want to make sure that working families earning under $400,000 are not faced with a tax hike.
But they're going to.
All of the wealthy individuals and corporations that benefited from the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, where there are provisions that are going to expire, the president, for the sake of working families and tax fairness, believes that the rich and corporations should pay their fair share.
You know, they pay their fair share. In fact, they pay everybody's share. They pay more than their fair share. They pay everybody's fair share. All right, we got today in stupidity, Kane.
All right, it is KJP. She's out there now, of course. Back in 1954, May 17th is Brown versus the Board of Education.
Yeah.
You know, segregation is unconstitutional. This is how she describes it and labels it. Listen.
We are indeed commemorating the landmark Broad v. Board of Education.
Broad?
So, like, the Nordstrom pipeline.
it's never ending with her. It's unbelievable.
Tyranny.
She's so far number one in today's stupidity.
How did she say emeritus? I can't even remember. Emeritus. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That does it for our program today, folks. Have a wonderful night. I will be back with you behind the mic tomorrow. Find us on Substack and like and subscribe YouTube, Facebook.